addition to messages, did you see that you got questions, a set of questions? Did anybody see that PDF? Now, what that is, and I think I told a few of you, this is not a game for me to confuse you. I give you the Bechina beforehand. There will be a couple of hundred questions there. If you write up answers to those questions and you study them, you know the answer. Because the point is to master material, not to play a guessing game as to what I'm going to ask you to do. Okay? So I provide you those questions, and you can use them for Chazara. They're pretty much, and if you get stuck in anything, you should send me a message. Send me an email during the day. I'm watching my email the whole time. It will show up on my BlackBerry. I answer Shiloh's on my BlackBerry, so it's, very much so during the day. So if you have anything that you want to ask me, please do if you can't find something. There may be other people. I still have to talk to a few other people. There may be other people that may join this, but I don't want it to get too big because I like to be able to learn with everybody individually. So at some point, if you have something that you're interested in, and I'll meet you in the basement on an afternoon and we can delve in it together. I can't do that when I have 35 people. I can't do it when I have 18 people. I can do it if I have between 5 and 8. I like to do that. I like to know where everybody's holding. I like to be able to get to know you. And I want this to be a good experience, both for you and for me. I do not repeat shearing. You'll find old versions of shearing on the Wayu Torah. I relearn the material myself so that it's fresh. So I chazer it every week. This I just did last night. I just wrote myself notes last night. Eventually, I guess I will get locked in a little bit because I'm hoping, God willing, to write a Sefer, to finish my Sefer this year and to publish it under YU's imprint. So there'll be shirim, and I'm sure some of the material will be there. And I do say the same thing, I hope, or at least it's consistent, but I'm mechadesh, so there's no schach that doesn't have a Dvar Chiddush in it, right? There's no Torah without Chiddush as well. I remember going to the Rav Shir in Moriah on a Tuesday night, and I had notes, and I remember that he was asked a question, and he puzzled it out, and at the end he came to the exact same conclusion of something he must have said years ago, because they were in the notes, but he reconstructed it. So the halacha is not an exercise in memorization, it's an exercise in thought. And I believe very clearly that halacha is psak of the sukkah, and that I want to ruin the experience of just reading the Mishnah Berurah or the Luach Beis HaKnesses. You want to understand the interior logic of halacha, you want to understand how nuanced it is, and you can't paskin halacha from deos. You need to understand the foundational principles. And my intention here is to make you morei hora, not to teach you the facts of the dinim. To give you a derech in learning halacha. So we begin the study of Issa V'Heter right away in a different way than the order of the Shulchan Aruch. We begin with the halachas of Taruvos. The Torah of Shulchan Aruch, of course, has a different order. Yoredeya opens with Hilchos Shkita, followed by Trefis. If you think about it, that's consistent with the order of the Mishnah and Cholin. First two Prakim deal with Shkita, and the third Perek deals with Trefis. We'll see on this occasion and other occasions that one of the organizing principles of the Tor and subsequently the Shulchan Aruch who follows the Seder HaSimanim of the Tor is the order of the Mishnah. That's only one organizing principle. The order breaks down later in Yoredeya as the Tor incorporates another organizing principle, a conceptual one. Once he's dealing with Trefus, that is features of the animal's body that could invalidate it for achila, he turns his attention to the other parts of the body, specifically dvarim hayotzi min haguf. So this takes him to Aver min hachai, and eventually to Hilchos Dam. And then, after Hilchos Malicha, the procedure for removing that dam, he deals with another liquid in the body, chalav. And that's how you get first to basar b'chalav. This means that both Malicha and Basar B'chalav, the two topics for us, actually precede Taruvos, even though the general principles of Taruvos are logically prior to the specific Isurim of Basar B'chalav and Dam HaNefesh. You can't study those two Inyanim without reviewing the laws of Taruvos. But because Basar B'chalav and Malicha are a specific instantiation of the laws of Taruvos, we should learn the general laws of Taruvos first. And that's why I start, and I think others now start, with Hilchos Taruvos. And that's where we begin there, with the general rules first, and then proceed to the specific cases of these principles in Basar V'Chalav and then Melicha. Now, it's not surprising, by the way, that the Torah vacillates between these two competing paradigms, by the way, following the order of the text and then topic. I'll call them text and topic. Right? When we consider the history of halachic literature, and we're going to get to see, God willing, a lot of halachic literature that you haven't seen before. We'll learn from the Kresi Uplesi. We'll learn from the Aruch HaShulchan. Each time we'll learn from Tshuvos HaRashba. Each time we'll say something about the general derech of not only the style and the format of the book, but also the general derech of the book. So we should get to know these poskim. We'll see the Kaf HaChayim, which we should have we'll see the Knesset HaGedola. We'll see the Yad Malachi. So we'll have taste of all these things. We'll see the Shaarei Yosher. We'll learn a little bit from the Shav Shmaisa. All to clarify the principle. Every one of them is a perush of the Gemara as the Shulchan Aruch is. Okay? When you consider then the history of halachic literature, we see that there are two paradigms for the presentation of psak, I think, the way I represent it. A posek can first present his work as a commentary on another work. Think of the Rif and the Rosh, both of which organize their major halachic works as a commentary on the Gemara. Right? And they follow the order of the Gemara. Now this has an obvious benefit. It allows the student of halacha to deal directly with the sources that inform the decision, and it reminds him that Psak Halacha is essentially a perush of the Gemara. The work of a posek is to intermediate all the sources in the Gemara, locate the one which presents in his mind the conclusion that represents the majority view, and then align the other sugyas in such a way that he harmonizes them into a unified and coherent view. And if you think about it, this actually continues the work of the Gemara itself, which harmonizes then, if I have to summarize what Gemara is, it harmonizes Mishnayos, Brisos, Masim, and Minhag into a coherent conclusion. Right? All these various competing sources. Like the Rif and the Rosh, the Tur finds himself following the order of the Prakim on occasion. But there's another paradigm, one that in its time has been controversial. And this is the topical presentation of halacha, organized not according to the Talmudic sources, but according to content. And who overall chose this format? The Rambam. And he argues for its advantages in his Hakdama to Mishnah Torah. I've discovered that a lot of my colleagues here, a lot of the Rosh Yeshiva, have the same love that I do for the Hakdamas of Sfarim. So I know when also Rabbi Avi Tzofati, one of my very close friends, and I found that we have a love for the Hakdamos of Svarim. Some of them are famous works in and of themselves. What's the obvious advantage to the topical approach? You can find the din that you need without having to know exactly in the Gemara where it's located. But what makes it controversial? Right? In part, because it may be considered by some to be an act of colossal hubris, chutzpah. Choosing a topical order of one's own means to some critics that the author has accorded himself the status of a Rabbeinu HaKadosh, an authority with the status of a Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler of our Mishnah. And indeed, it's no accident then that the Rambam cited the Mishnah as a precedent for two important characteristics of the Yad HaZaka. It's organized topically, and not by the order of the Talmud, and it's written in Hebrew, not the mixture of Hebrew and Aramaic in which the Talmud's written. Right? So it's no accident that Rambam cited the Mishnah, because it was for him the precedent that justified him writing the Sefer in the way in which he did, and for which he was attacked.
I'm sorry, quickly?
Yes.
Just what exactly is this advantage? It seems arrogant because...
You suddenly, all the authors say he's from the Rambam is from the base midrash that ultimately goes back to the Rif, right? The Baal Lachos Gedolos, right? That strain of Svardi Poskim who organized their work around the Gemara. All of a sudden he comes and says it's organized in 14 different snifim, and I'm going to present the halacha topically, and I'm going to omit the Gemara sources, and it's no longer studying the Gemara and then the halacha that, you know, that adhere to it, but it's, you know, studying the my presentation without the Gemara. So what he actually says in the Hakdamah is that he wants to liberate the common person who doesn't understand Gemara from the study of Gemara. That's controversial, to say the least. Right? Now, if you think about it, and that's why he cites the Mishnah, because you think back to ancient times, right, to the beginning of the Torah Shebaal Peh, there were two forms for learning halacha. There was Midrash halacha, and the way in which, if you look in the Sifra and the Sifra, you can see the way the Tanya Midrashim are organized, right? Usvartam lachem mimocharasa shabbos. Usvartam lachem. Pause. Shetei svira lachol achas v'achas. Mimocharasa shabbos. Mimocharasa pesach. The way in which there was the Midrash form in which the Pasuk was learned, all the Torah Sheba'al Peh was learned right on the Torah Shebichsav. And then there was the Mishnah form, which is what is called by scholars apodictic law, law that's been removed from its textual context and is just given as a psak. The Rambam felt that the precedent for him to do this was the Rabbeinu HaKadosh, was the Rabbi Yehuda, that's it. Okay? Now, between these two, then, extremes of order, topic and text, I want to call them, we should note that there's one intermediate paradigm that might be considered a hybrid. This is all by way of introduction, because we're going to do Sefer Salafa. I don't think you ever get a chance to talk about any of this stuff. I think you should know it, right? You should know all the Sfarim. I, by the way, believe, like the Gra, that you should know the Seder, Tanaim, and Amoraim. Sometimes you can see in a particular page of the Sugya, you can see, I can explain to you that the order of a particular sugya goes Surah Pumbedisa, Surah Pumbedisa, Surah Pumbedisa. You miss the whole interior logic of a sugya when you don't understand that. Who said this? Not Jacob Neusner. Who said it? The Gra. The Gra said it, right? Okay. Although I would point out that, like the Rambam said, the truth is truth no matter where it comes from, right? But the fact of the matter is, this is not Kfira. This is the Gra set. You need to know these things. You miss the whole logic of the sugya when you don't know that. Okay? It's also important to know the relative authority. Right? Now, it's not a historical exercise, however, and we're not going to deal with history. I just want you to, you know, sort of helps to understand where things came in. In our world, law is ahistorical. Halacha is ahistorical. There can be a machlokas between the Rambam and Rashi, although most authorities, only recently do we think that Rambam might have seen Rashi, right? But classical thought says he never saw Rashi. There can be a machlokas, Rambam and Rashi. I'm famously known, it appears in Why You Torah in a recording, that I have said on many occasions to Talmidim when they ask me something about halacha and I ask their opinion, and they quote something, I say, it's a machlokas, you and the machaber. Right. So, all right. But you can have, because what we're interested in is the deos, right? We're interested in the shitos. We're interested in understanding what a prick approach is, and then how it might contradict another approach. That's not history. That's law, right? Halacha. That's halacha, right? Law is ahistoric, right? It's not that it's anti-historical. It's not historical, right? So remember the Rav's beautiful, famous essay, which he says when he sits down to learn, who walks in? The Rambam walks in, right? And eventually his father walks in, and Reb Chaim walks in, and the Rif walks in, right? You sit around the table surrounded by all these people, right? They might not have lived at the same time, but they're dealing with the same topics. And indeed, think about it, we're learning Issa V'Heter, whether or not you really wind up using this as a rub, and I think if you don't function a rabbinical function, you're still important to know, just in the gather that lahavdil, a doctor needs to know microbiology. He might not use it, but he needs to know, because if you link with the intellectual experience of B'nai Torah, who always learned Iser V'Heter, right? Which is why I believe I'm sort of a little disappointed that we're not putting a heavy emphasis on Shchit anymore, and that we don't learn Treifus. This Treifus is like that's trial by fire, that when I studied for, you know, Smicha, I had to make my way through, right? We also should know Hilchos Shabbos in and out. By the way, the hardest part of the Rabbanut Smith, I can tell you personally, is the is Hilchos Bishul. Bishul B'Shabbos, the hardest part. Okay. Anyway, so we have these two extremes of topic and text, and here's the intermediate paradigm that might be considered a hybrid. We'll get into the Gemara soon. Okay. It's a form that was quite popular during the period immediately after the Rambam appeared, but before his standing was firmly established. There's a series of authors who organized their svarim around the Maimra of Rabbi Simlai in Makos, Taryag Mitzvos, right? 365 according to the Yemot Sechama and 248 according to the Evarim of the human body, right? What does that say? What's the point of his drasha? The point of his drasha is that Torah embraces the entire year, every time, and every part of the human existence, right? So every part in time and every part in physical reality. So that's the point that he made, but that the Monia Mitzvos took it constructively, and they ordered their svarim around the order of the psukim in the Torah. These are known as the Monei HaMitzvos, and they include the Smag, the Sefer Mitzvos Gadol, which we're going to see quoted all the time, that was written by Rabbi Moshe Mikutzi in the middle of the 13th century. The Smak, the Sefer Mitzvos Katan, which is an attempt to abbreviate the Smag, and it was written by Rabbi Yitzchak Miporveil around the same time. He was one of the Balei Tosfos who died about 30 years after the Smag first appeared, which means he died in 1280. The Smag appeared about 1250. The Sefer Achinuch, who actually chose in his introduction to obscure his own name, and he only identifies himself as Ish Yehudi Mibes Levi Barceloni. He was from Barcelona, right? And of course, the Rambam's own Sefer Mitzvos. So the book is topical in the sense that each discussion is centered around a particular pasuk or parsha in Chumash, and textual in that it follows the order of the parshios and psukim in the Torah. So you could consider that sort of a hybrid, right? Okay. So we can see then that there's great precedent for the Torah's own hybrid order, which is mostly topical, but sometimes ordered within a topic according to the Seder HaSugnos. When did it appear? It's written in the first half of the 14th century. We should note, by the way, that it began in another format. The Torah compiled an abbreviation of the commentary of his father, the Rosh, which he first called Sefer HaRimozim, or Simanei Asheri, but it now appears in Shas as Kitzur Piskei HaRosh. You'll see it right after the Rosh in the Vilna Shas. Right? Since it followed the order of the Rosh, it was organized according to the Sugyos HaShas. On the other hand, it was pure Psak, and it was expanded into the Arba HaTorim. Right? That's enough for now. So the study of Yisro B'Hetzer is going to introduce us to many different svarim, each with its own style and approach, and to one degree or another, they will incorporate elements of topic and text in their organization. Now on to Yisro B'Hetzer. By the way, I would have loved if somebody would have done this for me when I first started learning Yisro B'Hetzer. I had a hard time. And only over the years have I compiled all this by reading all the Hakamos, to all the Svarim, and reading some of the histories, that have been written, and reading a wonderful essay by the late Professor Tversky, the father of our own Rav Meir Tversky Shlita, who on the emergence of the Shulchan Aruch. I don't know where it appears, but it was once collected in a book of essays called The Jewish Expression or something, but it's a wonderful, wonderful essay about the Levush and the Shulchan Aruch and the Tur and all that. Yes, sir.
So I mentioned earlier that the notion that halacha is, or psak is ahistoric. How do we jive that with the general common, I guess, minhag that, you know, later poskim won't necessarily argue with Rishonim or et cetera? I know there's a whole machlok with that.
No, but that's not because of history. That's because we make the assumption that there are two competing principles, and we'll have to spend some time talking about it another time, but I will have to spend some time. There's the principle that there's relative authority, to Tanoim versus the Moraim, and Moraim over Gaonim, and Gaonim over others, and then Acharonim. And there's also the principle of Halacha to Basra, right? And if you think about it, those are two contrary principles, at least, maybe even contradictory, but contrary to say the least, right? And we'll have to like intermediate. There is a notion called Hidar Derus Hadoros, right? That the generations degrade the further away we are from Matan Torah. On the other hand, the principle Halacha Kibasrai, because he saw everything. So right. The person who comes and says something, definitely, right? So, but Halacha Kibasrai doesn't mean that some kid in MTA learned everything and then the Paskin Salacha. There's always a notion of relative authority there too, right? So the two work together, and that's why I say they are contradictory, not contrary, right? Okay, but I don't think it's because of history. I think it's because of relative authority, right? Okay. And in other words, we always are going to want to reject the notion that a machlokas between somebody is just a question of the historical period in which they lived. And this is a notion that is prevalent among non-Orthodox expressions of Judaism and in certain so-called expressions of Orthodoxy, that the rabbis were in the job of, their mission was to do politics, right? So it might be that Chazal were affected by their historical understanding of things, but I don't think they ever tried to pervert halacha by doing history. Right? It might be that you might have found that a posek who lived in the 1950s might have been affected by the New Deal, right? In his understanding of what was good, right? But his conscious effort was to paskin according to the shot of the Soviet, not to be political. Okay? Okay. Now, on to Issa V'Heta. Okay. So there's no Masechta in Shas that exclusively dedicated to Issa V'Heta. In fact, Issa V'Heta is probably not the most effective description of our topic of study, since many inyanim and issues can be considered Issa V'Heta, matrimonial law, right? So let's use the Torah's descriptive name Yoredeya, which, by the way, includes a host of other topics, including stucco within its precincts. Now, my wife's grandfather, who studied at Pressburg and Galanti Yeshiva, brought a smicha from Europe that included a popular lashon that deals with this, just this principle. His cloth says, Meya ve'esrim simonim ve'chelet aleph de Yoredeya. And by the way, it's the same purpose of the 365 days and 248, right, for the Monei Mitzvahs. 120 simonim, because symbolically one simon for every year of human life, right? But anyway, those are the simonim that basically deal with kashas. And that's Chelek Aleph, if you notice. So when we're going to concentrate on Chelek Aleph, which means we won't study Yein Nesef, except peripherally when we see Taruvos topics in Maseches Avodah Zarah, which we do. So because the Gemara is organized in what the Meiri calls Derech HaTalmud, this almost stream of consciousness method, we will encounter sugyos not only in Chulin, but in Psachim, and throughout the Yushalmi and Zerayim. Mostly, however, we find ourselves in Chulin, and that's why I've asked you usually to bring a Chulin with you, unless we expect we won't need it on a particular day. And by the way, we get credit for a Chulin in this as well. The Chulin requirements fulfilled by learning your day with me. Okay. Our first sugya is in Perek Gita Nasha, the seventh Perek. Okay. In it, we're going to encounter two foundational principles of Hilchos Taruvos, two sources of potential Isur with which we will contend, God willing, in the weeks ahead. So let's jump right in. After the Mishnah establishes the contours of the prohibition itself, Dehainu, when and where does it apply? Does it apply during Bifnei Abayis or also Shelo Bifnei Abayis? Does it apply in Eretz Yisrael only or in Chutz La'aretz as well? Why? Because it's in Kutchin, right? So, you know, that's the questions are natural. Which thigh? Which animals? Does it apply to Oph? And all these I would consider to be Atzmus HaYisur, the Guf HaYisur, that is the Yid itself. Then it turns to a second source of Yisur, the Tama Yisurim, the disembodied flavor that may have mixed with other ingredients in a pot if the ghee was included. So if you'll go with you, return with me please to Tzadi Vav Amud Beis in the Mishnah. To apologize, I'm going to slaughter the Hebrew language, because when I speak English, I have to speak in Yeshivish. You know, I gave this year a couple of years in Hebrew, then I can say Taruvot, but I can't when I'm speaking English. Okay, I guess that.
What would the rabbanit say?
In Merkaz Rav, we learned that you weren't allowed to speak English in the Yeshiva.
Right.
Even I had Anglo roommates. We spoke in Hebrew even when the lights were out and the door was closed. I mean, we spoke in Hebrew all the time, but you never spoke English or Yiddish or any other language. But in English here, I had a Rebbe, the late great Rosh Hashiva Bubba of Rabbi Moshe David Steinwurzel, the Zatzal, was my Rebbe for your day, and I learned with him for a number of years. And he once told me, you know, you learn very well, but please don't speak Spanish. So it's hard for me in English to, you know, to speak properly. I have given this year in Hebrew, then it's easy for me. Okay. So Yerash Nishpashel Bagidinasha. So if you have a Gidinash, you have a thigh and with the Gidinasha in it. Im Yesh Ba Benosein Tam Harezo Asura. If there's enough to give off the you know, the flavor, then it's asura. And then he says, yeah, and then he says, gida nashesh and nispashel, what's the lashon, bena gidim or whatever, right? If you have a mixture of gida nashesh with other gidim, nispashelim a gidim, look at Rashi, shel heter, so you have mutter gidim and gida nashesh, right? What does the Mishnah say? Anybody have the lashon there? What's the lashon in the Mishnah? What is it? Say loud.
I'm just going over again.
So look what Rashi supplies. So if you have Gida Nashish and Nispashel Ben Agidim, obviously Gidim Shal Heter. But Rashi supplies something that isn't there. Bizman Shemakiro. If you know which one is Gida Nashish, Mashlicho, you got to throw it out. The Mishnah doesn't say anything about that. The Mishnah just says, right? And then the Einkan Ella Pleitaso. What do you have here? The two sources of Isur. Rashi has to supply additional information because the Mishnah is elliptical. The Mishnah tells us that if the Gid was cooked with other Gidim that are not prohibited, we have only to determine if the Gid might have given off its flavor. If it might have, right? If it might have exuded its plata, right, into the other gidim, or into the pot. The Tana assumes we know which gid is the gid anashe, and therefore only mentions the shear of Nesinas Tam to determine if the other contents in the pot are permitted. One important detail is missing, and Rashi supplies it. If there's no Nesinas Tam, the gid anashe hasn't asserted the rest of the gidim in the pot, but it's still a self is usher. This is why he tells us mashlicho lechutz, it has to be discarded. Get it? Voila. Oh, I'm a multilingual person. Two sources of isur, the chefze di isura and the tama di isura. The chefze di isura is the gid. The tama di isura is its plate. Okay?
So the way we're constructing, it sounds as if they're equal, but it's not like whether or not they're directed to Rabbanon, meaning...
We haven't said anything about relative source yet,
okay.
Just
general
what the...
categories.
Just the categories, right. This leads, that's a very good point, okay? This leads to the Gemara's question, at the very bottom of Tzadi Tes Amud Beis. If you flip there, very bottom, the last line. Yid Hanashis Nishbashel. That's the Pesach. See it? Very bottom, last line. The lead to Baruba.
Tzadi Tes Amud Beis.
Amud Beis. When you have a Gid Hanasha that was cooked among other Gidim, why do I have to throw one away? Lead Tul Baruba. Why isn't it Batil Barov? There's a majority of kosher Gidim. There's only one Gid Hanasha. Why isn't it Batil Barov? Answer, Ber Yashane. Sorry, Ber Yashane. It's a sheep, right? Okay. The one yeshivish pronunciation I can't do is medrash. That I can't do. But otherwise, I'm thoroughly corrupted by this way of speaking. Okay? Why isn't the Gid Batel Bein Hagidim Hamutarim? The Gemara here assumes that the principle of Bitul Barov that is established in the first parak of Kolin with its two classic cases, Sanhedrin and the 9 stores out of 10 that sell kosher meat in a particular locale, also applies here to the Gidim. Okay. So if there's a majority of Gidei Heter, and we don't know which one is the Gid Hanasha, why don't they cancel it out following the principle of Acharei Rabim Lahatos? Answer. Gid is the exception that proves the rule. Right? I always wonder what that principle actually means. How does an exception prove the rule? It is the exception, because it's Shaneh. Gid is a barrier, a complete unit of Isur from its creation. We're going to refine this definition later when we reach the laws of Beria. A bear is not nullified by a majority. Mashma, other things are. So the Gemara here presents 2 exceptions to what it cites as the general rule. In Isur v'Heter, unless something constitutes a stipulated exception, a rove of Heter cancels out Atzmus ha'Isur. With me so far? Okay? So, isn't it amazing? Like other things that we're going to find in Isur v'Heter, foundational principles reach us only agav orcha. Right? They reach us as the foundational principle here is only taught through its exception. Right? The source for rove in the first parak is by shechita. We can accept rov mitzuyin etzel shechita mumkin hay. We can assume that we can assume the principle of chazaka, that legal presumption. It has nothing to do with the case that we're talking about here. They give 2 kinds of a rov there. We're going to see it in rov, by the way. They give 2 kinds of a rov. They give a rov to isa kaman and a rov to lesa kaman. A rove to Issa Kaman is where there's a population right in front of us, right? We have a Sanhedrin. We follow the majority of the Sanhedrin, right? Or we have 10 stores in a town and 9 sell kosher meat. We find a package of one. We can assume that it came from the 9 majority, right? Okay?
We have control of the entire sample. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah. We have a full population in front of us. The full population of chances in front of us, right? So therefore, we know what probability adheres. Anybody take statistics here?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me put it in those terms, okay? So here we have, but where we don't have, we have a sample of a population that's not in front of us, right? Like, for instance, we take 1 student. Somebody tells us there's 1 student who we can offer you as a speaker to your Haredi shul from Yeshiva University. So we say, well, okay, it's all boys, it'll be a problem. Turns out it's from Stern, right? It's a woman from Stern, and they're not interested, okay? So we say, well, how about if you said, well, no, I'm going to stop by 185th Street and pick up the student, right? So then, oh, well, the majority of students up there are male, so it's probably a male, right? But if you only take one and you don't take the full population, how do I know that that's representative of the population? How do I know that a sample is representative of a population? What is the probability that I flip a, I give a bad example. What is the probability that I flip a coin and I get it, if it's a fair coin, and I get heads?
50-50,
if it's a fair coin, right? Okay? How, what's the probability that I flip 10,000 coins and I get 5,000 heads?
Not 50-50.
It isn't 50-50. It's actually much less than 50-50. Okay? Right. I don't, but if I had, if I knew that you did 10 flips, it would be a pretty fair guess to say that half of them, or that one of them, was heads. I had a good chance of being right. Okay? When I assume a population that doesn't exist in front of me, I might have a skewed sample. Okay? Right? That's a rogue DESA come on, a rogue DELASA come on. But here, I'm talking about even a simpler case. And let's make the case even though, not just Gidim, because that's not something in our experience, right? Because we, in practice, in Chutz La'aretz, don't traber. We don't remove Gid and Usha. We sell that thai. It's a very complex thing. It's not commercially viable. They sell the thai to other people. Right? The only in Eretz Yisrael can get certain cuts of meat because they do the trabering, which is a very difficult act to do to remove Gid and Usha. Okay, let's take your three meatballs. You put them down on a plate. You have two meatballs that you put down by your barbecue. Your neighbor's housekeeper sees, oh, barbecue, and comes and puts her meatball down on the platter too. It's the Vela. You don't know which meatball is yours, which meatball is hers. They haven't been barbecued yet. They get mixed together. Do you have to throw them all out?
Meikar Adin, no.
That's a very, that was very cleverly stated, right? Okay. You want to avoid the Rabbanan question, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's consider that case and flip back to the Rush in Siman Lamed Zayin. On our Gemara. And you're looking for the words V'dafke gi v'chaticha Aval davar sheino beria V'lo chaticha Ruyal iskabe Batel barok. I apologize, it's a long one. I didn't bring mine. I usually have it marked there. Lamed Zayin. Siman Lamed Zayin. The Dafke Gi V'chatich, anybody finds it fast?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to call it out, okay? The Dafke Gi V'chatich, they're the only exceptions, but something that isn't a barrier and not a chaticha ruyal iskabe is batel baro. So the Rush learns the way we just did, that the general rule can be learned from the exceptions. Because it's citing these as exceptions, mashma, the general rule is batel baro. Va'afilu iser drabon and leka, the Rush says. And when I have these three meatballs, there's not even iser drabon. Kidemash mahacha, v'yeresh emuter la'ochlan ke'achas. And he's going to argue that I can eat all three meatballs at once, to pop them all in my mouth, and scarf them down. The implication here is not only that there's no Easter whatsoever, but you can eat all three at once, meaning one is Vadai eating what was before Bitul Easter Dioraisa. That's interesting. Here's the situation. There are three meatballs, two shall Basar Shchuta, that's the opposite of Basar Nevela, and one shall Nevela. They're inadvertently mixed. We'll learn in the next sima why I add the word inadvertently. Ein mevatlin isur lachila. It's another. One cannot rely on the principle people who wrote to construct a means of permitting isur. We're going to discuss whether this is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, but we can't do everything at once. So these three meatballs are sitting on a platter. Without any gravy to mix their flavors or touching one another. This is what's known in halachic parlance as yavesh b'yavesh. Talmidim often confuse the meaning of this and its opposite, lach b'lach. Lach means moist, it doesn't mean liquid. Lach b'lach doesn't mean two liquids, but two solids in a liquid medium or a solid and a liquid together. Yavesh b'yavesh means the solids do not have a liquid medium that will allow their flavors to mix and for each to exude, to be machlit into the other, or polate. In other words, yavesh b'yavesh is purely a matter of atzmus ha'isur. There's no pleitas ha'isur. It remains the prototypical, simplest case of isur v'heter. And it's the one which we need to understand completely before we proceed. We'll skip the Rosh's citation of the Gemara in Perek HaTarovos. It's in Zvachim. That's Perek HaTarovos. It's Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. By the way, I invite you to look at it at your leisure because it will likely come up again in Sveik Sveik at the end of Tarovos. And we're going to see it in another case also when we learn the background for Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin and the Shita of the Ran, right, in Min Bimino. And those who choose to meet with me to learn the particulars of this complex Indian, you're going to enjoy the sugya immensely. But let's move down a few lines to where the Rosh deals with our case. But first I have to ask a question. What kind of principle is Bitul Barov? And here I have discussed this before. There's a long discussion of this in a Kol Yom Rishon and Why You Tell It. It's called empiricism versus conceptualism in halacha. I always like very fancy titles. This won't become topic versus text. Okay? What kind of a principle is Bitul Barov? The Torah might be saying one of two things, I think. The Torah might simply be saying, when you have a rove, follow the rove. That's all.
It means pragmatic.
Or positivist.
What's the difference? Sorry.
Just the law. Just because there was a cousin. Not meant to teach anything other than follow the rove in cases of rove. Not to give it any kind of logic or to ascribe to it any more than it is. Or could be more. I think you'll see it from the other side. Okay? The Torah might also be saying, when you have a rove, follow the probability that the particular object with which you're dealing has the characteristics of the rove. By the way, I taught in the CJF Women's Kollel over the summer. Where do we get the right in learning to draw conceptual reasons from things? You ever think about that?
Svara?
Yeah. Where do we get the right to, all it is say, God says do this. We have the right to ascribe, to learn other halachas from that. How do we have the right to be lomdim davar mitok davar? What does it say you can do that? What's this conceptual basis for that? What? Yeah, but where do they come from? Are they? Is it just halachah l'moshe m'sinai? Where do you have the right to do? What's the right to do all this brisker Torah? What's the right? Yeah, what's the right for that? What is the? But you know, are we creating stuff that doesn't follow the mind of God? Right. Now I want to just rest assured, I'm not a Karaite. Okay, I just want to understand. Okay, okay. I want to know what's the right to do this. Okay. Let's think back to one of the prototypical cases the Gemara often cites: 9 stores that sell kosher meat and 1 that sells nevela. That's the meaning of Acharei Rabim Lahatos. I find a package of meat. Here's the difference: is the Torah telling me in Acharei Rabim Lahatos that the probability is that the meat I found is that it comes from one of the kosher stores? Or is the Torah simply saying, Gezeiras HaKasuv, we follow the majority? Now, if you're like the Balabatim that I encounter when I travel around the country, they'll say, what difference does it make? The law is the law. Well, it might just be a difference in Havana. That'd be enough for me. I'd like to understand why we do stuff or what I'm supposed to be thinking while we do it. I'd like to be an ish ha-halakha, right? I'd like to make my life the practical embodiment of principle, right? Of the so-called metaphysics or mathematics of halakha. But actually, it's more. There are implications for other situations. And we need to understand the yesod of bitul barov before we can go farther. So look, the Rosh says, Aval chad betray bidavar yavesh afilu midrabanin batel. Why? Dela mishum sveka sharinan lay. The Rosh says unequivocally that bitul does not work because of probability or because of suffix. In the language of the Achronim, by the way, I'm going to introduce you to the Sharia Yosher, if you're interested, the greatest book on jurisprudence ever written by the Rav Shimon Shkup, Zeichut Tzadik Livracha, who, by the way, was a Rosh Yeshiva in this institution at one point. I don't know if you know that Sharia Yosher was here. Taught in Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Lachanan, which absurdly could make me say my colleague, the Sharia Yosher. But I find it absurd to refer to Rav Schechter and Rav Lichtenstein as my colleagues, right? So, chas v'chalila, you know. Anyway, in the language of the Achronim, bitul barov, the Rosh is saying, is not a beirur. It's not the working of a principle of suffix. And here's his proof. I'm reading from there, if anybody found it. Next, in the future, I'll give you the lines. Da'afilu i'achel le'chada chada. Even if you ate them one by one, leka ela chada sveka, each one has one suffek, usveka dioraisa lachumra. This is givaldi. This is huge. You're already having one of the best days of your life just to have encountered this. Okay, this is brilliance. On a suffek level, bitul barov doesn't work. Forget about the Rosh's contention that one can eat all three of them at once. He's going to argue that later. Right? Even if one doesn't, but eats them sequentially, or just eats one, the only other way that one can eat, the meatball from a suffek perspective is prohibited. Why? Because the meatball has only two states that it could be, either heter or iser. In a statistical world, we call each meatball a sample, and the total number of meatballs in population. If I only eat one meatball, one would think it has a 1/3 probability of being iser. But in a world of suffix, it matters not what the probability is, but how far removed the case is from iser d'oraisa. See now, Benny, how it doesn't work on a probability basis? Here there is only one suffek, and from a suffek perspective, it's sveka dioraisa lechumra. So if bitul barov doesn't work on the level of suffek, what's its basis? And the Rosh continues. Ela mishum digzeras hakasufu dichsiv achari rabim lahatos. And hilkach Chad betray batel. In the language of jurisprudence, if the law isn't conceptual, then it's positivist, a command. It's been posited. The Torah says, follow the rove when one has mixtures of yavesh v'yavesh, as in Sanhedrin, 9 out of 10 stores, or 3 meatballs. Here's the kicker. And what does this then imply? The nepach iser lios heter umuter la oflan afilu kulan echas. The implication that is that if the Torah declared that the meatball is kosher, not because of a conceptual argument, but because of positivist law, a command, a gzeirah, that it's not contingently usher, a mutter. It's me'ikar adin mutter.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, please.
So basically, he wants
always to say, interrupt me. This is not like a performance.
So basically, he wants to argue that the bittul has nothing to do with probability based on the fact that, in principle, we have a notion of something derived to the chumrah. In theory, we've got one meatball, which is treif, known to be treif, two, which are heter.
Meatball only has two states. Meatball has two states it could be.
Heter,
it doesn't matter what the probability of that is. There are only two states it could be. And since there are only two states it could be, it's Sveika D'Oraisa and Sveika D'Oraisa Lechumra.
And if it's mutter, it must be something that trumps as of Red Lechumra, which must be that that's Xerida Katu, that no necessary reason, it's just once you have one and two, everything's mutter.
Precisely.
Okay. Wait, so that means according to the Rush, I'm sorry for me to jump ahead. According to the Rush, the notion of Chozer Benair must be at best Derabana.
Ah, well, so here's what I want to say.
You see, Nepach Leot, D right the
right.
Level. Chozer Benair is a non starter completely. It must only be Derabana part of the Rush.
Not necessarily.
How could that be?
Because we can say that Nepach Leos Heter, because the Iser part is asleep, and it functions like Heter.
So that means it's not really Heter then.
It is no. It's heter for every function until it isn't. Right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult. Okay. But in any, if, you know, the what you're arguing is you're saying is that forever nepaf ha iser lios kulo heter means it's forever.
That's what it means.
And
that,
I'm not saying that.
I don't.
I'm suspending judgment. I'm saying that. Nothing is forever except a dime. No, that's, you know, I'm saying nothing is forever, okay? But I don't know. It's a question for the second Siman. It's a question for Tzadi Tess. Do we maintain that Iser can be reawakened, reactivated in another mixture? Matza min es mino, right? The Chozer Veneo, right? This is called Chozer Veneo, but not for now, okay? Now, is there another opinion? Okay? Is there another opinion other than the Rush? Yeah, there are lots of other opinions. Okay? The Rush is going to dominate, but let me give you some sources for anybody who's interested. The Sugya in the Gemara and Baba Basra, Lamed Aleph on the base. The Rid, as in Tosfos Rid, brings the din of two shvilim, where you don't know which one's Tahor. And two people went down. One went down, each one of them. And we hold that both those men are tahorim. But if the two guys both touched one kikar, it's tameh. That's what the sugya says. So the Tosfos Arid writes.
I'm sorry. Just if the case is that there's
two paths.
Two paths.
And one of them is a path of tuma, and the other is a path.
Each goes down a separate path.
And then
one
they meet, and there's a key card, not key card tzion, but an actual loaf of bread. Okay? And they meet, and they both touch the key card. Kumbhara says if one of them touches it, it doesn't matter which one, the key card's tahor. But if they both touch it, then the key card is
tameh.
Okay. So the Tosfos Arid argues that this din resembles Heicha Dinis Arva Chatifa Achas Shel Chelev B'Shnayim Shel Shuman. Shuman is kosher fat, and Chelev is lesser fat. Dibtele Barov Umutar L'Adam L'Kach Achas Mehen Uliochla, because Basar Ruba is Linen, but three men can eat each one. But if one person wants to eat three of them, he has to bring a Karban Chatas. Because he vadai ate chelev. And therefore, Yotze, according to the read, from that Gemara, a chiddush gadol in our Gemara. Right? And that's that even after the chatichas isur is batel b'shnayim, because we're azlin and barsaruba, nevertheless, it's not permitted to eat all of them, only one of them. And he learns that not nepach lios heter. Right? But only it's only contingently heter. And now his shita will be, right? his sheet is just that there's a din of bitul yavesh v'yavesh, but without this din, he'd have to bring an asham talui, and that's all that the din allows him to do, is not bring an asham talui.
I'm sorry, I don't see how the case with paths is comparable to the case of chela. I'm not following his logic there. I mean, in the case of chela, you have an actual case of yavesh v'yavesh, you have an actual talui, you have a notion of robe operating. In the other case of two paths, no notion of robe operating.
We have two
there's
men.
No talui operating.
We have two men.
Yeah.
And it would be better for three men, but we have two men.
Right, there's no rope there.
Yeah, we have two men. Oh, no, it's exact balance, though. It's kemetzel metzel, right? So it's exactly balanced, right?
Mechzel metzel kerov.
Yeah.
By touching the key
ground. Yeah, that's
right.
Enough, so
okay. Okay, so these two men. If we, because of rove, right, or because of suffek, right? Now, each one of them could be a suffek d'oraisa, right? But
right.
It's tumah. Each one of them, what he's saying is when they combine, they affect Iser. When they don't, when they're separate, we can go by the halacha, we can go by the probability breakdown. So what he's saying then is that would seem to indicate that you can't eat all three. He's arguing with the second half of the rush. Which means then that brings him back. The rush wants to argue from the fact that you can eat even one of them because it should be sveik de raisa, that you can eat, that it must be nepach. He says from the sugya and shnei shvilin, it can't be nepach. It's got to be just that the Torah is allowing you and pottering you from an asham talui.
That's
again,
all. But he was saying it can be nepach once.
Yeah, so look,
they're being separated.
Look in the Tosfos Arid in Baba Basra. I'll send it to anybody if they don't have it. And there's a beautiful Reb Chaim and a Kovet Shirim on the same Gemara, on the exact same Gemara. They argue on the same point as to whether or not Rove is a Beirur or a Hanhaga from that Sugya too.
No, but his point is that once you separate them out, that's when you have a problem. So for him, would there be
no? Once you bring them together, that's when you have a problem.
Once you bring
when they both touch the key card, then there's a problem.
So would he have the same din if it was a Lach B'Lach Tarubot?
Yeah, no. Then it's a question of. The taste could actually be batel, right? The Atzmus Isur would be according to the, you know, so you can ask, how would he hold ever lach b'lach? That's
right.
A good question. It's a very good question, okay? But he says, Dvarav are davka yavish b'yavish. Because he holds the lach b'lach, nepach ha'isur, v'yos kulo hetar. Because there are mefurish sugyas b'chol ha'shas. That say so. The Tosfos Arid says that Shnei Shvilin only applies to Yavesh B'Yavesh. Oh, Baruch Shekivanta. Okay. Why does he make a distinction between them? First of all, because of the Gemara of Shnei Shvilin, and second, because of Lach B'Lach, there's Eruf HaIsur Beheter, and there's active Bitul, Masha Ein Kein in Yavesh B'Yavesh. That's his argument. Okay. If you look in, and the Kovet Shirim is in Masechus Psachim. The Bitul Barov, he argues, is Mishum Rubo Kulo, like we find in Shechita. If you Shachat Rov HaSimani, Dechal Alamiyu Dina Rov. And we'll look at the Shari Yosher to say that that's not the case. Elamim Mishum De Azlina Basta Ruba. Okay? But the Rush is the big Mahaf here. He's the one that we have to contend with because. He's the one that is going to be determinant in the halacha. Okay?
Or we discuss the Rashba also.
Sorry?
Or we discuss the Rashba.
Yeah, we're going to, next time, we're going to do the Torah Sabayis from the Rashba. But I will supply it because I will supply a modern, Mosad Rav Kook edition. So
I have the old one's tough.
What?
The old one I worked with was very hard.
It's very hard, and it's got a lot of typos in it, and it's faded and whatever. This is excellent, the Mosad Rav Kook. I have like three different editions of the. My wife gets very angry at me because now you're buying the same Sfarim in second and third editions. It's enough, like you have like thousands of Sfarim. Now you have to buy like new editions. I have like three crazy places. I got a bunch of Rambams and whatever. But, you know, what can you do? You know? So my way of doing it is I actually have to. Buy the safer, I have to, before I walk into the house, I have to put a little dirt on the cover or whatever. And, oh, I had this. You know, I've had this for years. Oh, it was just published this year. Well, I had an advanced edition, right? So, what can you do? You know, what can you do? Okay, this is just a little taste to start. Okay, you got, this works best when you bug me. It means when you send me emails and tell me I'd like you to call me. Right, I'm here a lot because I'm doing a couple other things here. In addition to teaching Yardea, it's the only thing I'm doing in REITs is teaching Yardea, and in the Smikas, teaching Yardea. I'm also giving a shiur for honors program, a couple of really strong guys in the college. I'm giving a shiur in Gemara, and I'm doing something in the Tikva program for MTA as well. So I'm like, you know, but I what I like to do is, hey, there's something, I saw this, I couldn't get it. I don't want to tell you the conclusion. I'd much rather learn the source with you. So if you're not in, you know, if you have time, you let me know, and I'll meet you by myself. We'll sit in the base midrash, and we'll go through the source. You get interested in something, that's what I like to do. That's why I want a small group, okay? Because I want, the most important thing is not to give you facts. The most important thing is to teach you method, to teach you what I do. That's what it should be. You should be able to, you'll know, God willing, how to learn it from the gutty. Now, the old way to do that was to sit in Slobodka for 7 years and learn the Prima Gani. We unfortunately don't have that luxury. One, there's no air conditioning in Slobodka, and two, it's a long commute from Tina. But we have a limited amount of time. But that's why it's very important for me. I hope you can see already. I'm interested in teaching method, so I'm self-consciously methodological. I want to go. I always tell you, I want to talk about the sfarim. I want to talk about the method. I very much, use language, philosophic language, and jurisprudential language in order to explain it, because I want you to do what I do. If it were just a question of knowing facts, there's plenty of sharing like that here, you know. Or you could just read Rabbi First's very beautiful art scroll book, The Halachas of Kashrut, which is excellent, by the way. It's an excellent sefer. But you wouldn't know how to make applications. You wouldn't know how to answer a shiloh. Okay? We're actually going to take shilohs. And what I do is I have a 3x5 card. Every time I miss a shiloh and I research it, I write down the answer and the background to it. Now, I have an extra neighbor who asks me shilohs all the time. Her name is Mrs. Betty Kay, and we're going to see Mrs. Betty Kay's shilohs. I answer, she has many shilohs. There's a lot going on in that kitchen over the years. She knows that I quote her shilohs. And I'm going to give you those typical shilohs that you're going to get from them. And I'm very often asked from Rabbanim and Tinek and elsewhere, because I specialize in Yoruday, I'm asked sometimes my opinion on Yoruday shilohs. And I want you to get to the point that you can answer those shilohs as well. Okay? If you can't answer people's questions, you can't, you know, then was this just some metaphysical, theopolistic exercise, right? The second thing I want to point out, however, that doesn't mean that you'll ever answer Shiloh's Tol Kedei Dibur. I do this. Somebody calls me up and asks me Shiloh, unless it's Kilui Milsa, factual answer, I say, I'm going to call you back. I put down the phone and I think. Never answer Tol Kedei Dibur. I once answered a rough Tol Kedei Dibur and wound up having to buy somebody a full set of dishes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so cost me lots of money. Learn from that.
What happened in that
shiloh?
It's complicated.
I answered on the basis of there's a shach and a chavistas and the prima gadim, and I love the lumps of it, so I answered on that, but we don't pass on that way. Mm-hmm. So we're just showing off intellectually, and I paid for it. Yeah, so never good. Okay. So and by the way, you should listen very carefully to what I say, and if you find something you think I said that was wrong, more than possible. Okay? It's more than possible. I was wrong in 1957 about something. Okay? I could be wrong again. There are only two people in the world who never make mistakes. My wife and her mother. Everybody else is wrong sometimes, or admits to being wrong.
Everyone's wife's and their mother.
Yeah. So if I say something that you think might be wrong, right? Okay? And I'm proud to say that I'm one of two people who taught in the Shishiva, Lahatil, who have sometimes answered, I don't know. The other was the Rav. It's very hard to say I don't know something, right? But Torah's truth, we should be honest, right? So, It's a rub. You have to, if you don't want to tell people you don't know something, or you want to think about it, you don't have to tell them you're going to call me. You can put down the phone and think about it. Just should always do that. Unless, of course, it's something toch kidei dibur that you have to answer in shul. And we're going to talk at the end of the year. I'm going to give you Meya Shelos in Or Chaim that I think a rub would have had in his Talisbet. Things that, you know, could happen that people don't know the answer to. Okay? A lot of them have to do when there's a, I'm going to tell you about Sfarim that you should keep in your Talisbet. Like Sefer Torah Shin Seitzbo Talos with this Surosa Osios. So you know, you don't just paskin a Sefer Torah, apostle to Sefer Torah when you don't have to. Okay? So we're going to be very interested in Psak Halacha. But conceptual, but that's the reason that I'm conceptual, because I want you to know how to paskin Shabbos. And I want you to bug me. The way to bug me is to write me an email. Except on Shabbos and Yom Tov, I don't go anywhere without my trusty iPad. So I have my email on me. You see, I answer you like very quickly, right? Okay? I'm you know, constantly doing it. If you want to win me over, send me from a Mac computer, okay? Not from Windows, okay? Just kidding. Okay. I'm like a Mac, like born again Mac guy. So, okay? Alright? You're not bothering me. If I don't hear from you, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to be insulted if I don't hear from you. Okay? Alright? Okay? Everybody happy? There might be some other people coming. I'm going to try to keep it not much more than that, but they would form Chavrusa opportunity, but I will be your Chavrusa in many ways. I gave you questions. You see that if you answer those questions, they basically summarize what we did. If you have trouble with any question, let me know. But I'm going to give you, they already have 220 of those questions prepared. But I edit them according to what we do. If, you know, you ask a question, you raise a point, then I'll edit the question. Okay? All right? Everybody here, if you put in the time, will pass the other day. There's no question about it. You just have to know what. There'll be no surprises. Okay? All right? So if they let you here, they think you're smart enough to do this. Okay? All right?
Are we always here?
I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, so far, yes, but I annoy everybody in the library because I talk so loudly. So I'm thinking maybe about a classroom. I'm thinking it might be less inhibiting, you know. But I like this because we can go get Sfarim all the time or whatever, you know. So maybe I'll ask them for a classroom.
Well, we're doing Sfarim Baby Drush.
Yeah. Oh, that I've learned there, too. I used to learn there. The Sfarim Beit Midrash is great because the Sfarim are right there.
Yeah.
And I feel the power of Chacham Ben Chaim. It makes me smarter when I know that I'm in the same place that he was. You know, that is really the gadol Shiva Chabur when it comes to Yerodea, by the way. You know, that's really the person that I would ask my question if I had a question, which I have asked him. So he's legendary. You know, I was here when the Rishon LeZion, who for me is always the Chazon Ovadia, it's always Rav Ovadia Yosef. I was here when he was in Yeshiva, and I witnessed him having a source, not being sure where the source was, and turning to Chacham Ben Chaim and asking him. That's pretty amazing. Of course, I saw the Rav do it with Rav Aaron also. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, so on. Also, I said, where is that Rishon LeZion? And of course, you know, these guys are incredible. Okay, great. Listen, I'm Sivim Chasim Etova. Okay.
Did we exchange your contact information?
Please, absolutely. I'm very careful with people's confidentiality, so if you notice, I send every email BCC.
Yeah.
If you want me not to, you know, if you want me to share with you other people's your email with other people, let me know. But I won't embarrass you. I won't embarrass you now by asking you. So it's, you tell me if you want me to share. And if that's not a problem, then I'll send to everybody openly.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, what I do is if you send me a good Shaila, you know, or Kasha, and I answer it, I'll answer it, but I won't mention your name if you don't want me to. But I very often will answer, and if I think it's good, I'll share the question and the answer. You know, now it may be that the question might be good, but I might not have a good answer, so I won't share. But if I have a very good answer, then for sure I'll share. Okay.
What are your thoughts on Rabadi's Mahalach?
Rabadi?
Rabadi.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. Sometimes. It's interesting.
There's a number of Simon's area taken by a lot of the bodies there.
Standpoint to normative halacha. I might have feelings about certain things like cheese or something like that from my study. Chas v'chalila, I would never have it because people should assume that when I mosher something, either for someone else's house or my own, they are not going by my kooky idiosyncratic shita. They're going by what the accepted halacha is. So the gadol there is Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe doesn't possibly doesn't matter it. I don't matter. But I'm not the equivalent of Rav Avadi, right? He's he can do that. But me, I'm just a megala milsa, not a mechadish. Okay. I wish everybody a siva chasim etelva. Okay. I don't know when they made this week.